Donna Behringer had no plans to run for another office after being term limited out of the state house last year. But she says her perusal of St. Louis's budget and other documents during COVID made her realize the city needs a different person overseeing its finances. The former alderwoman and candidate for comptroller joins me next on the latest episode of Politically Speaking. Let's hit the music.
This is Politically Speaking, the definitive show about politics in the St. Louis region.
I thought this was an opportunity to have a new voice in that seat.
And the decisions I make in county government allows me to help people in large groups, and I enjoy it.
We're not using it as a wedge issue. We're using it more as a, you know, what's right for the region conversation.
We need to know what the issues are in our communities in order to address them.
Because people want to see change, and they want to see a St. Louis that works for everyone.
Some days I need to credit, most days I don't. But most importantly, I have to be able to control how this environment is going to evolve.
We knew that in races that have multiple candidates, the only way you win is in the streets.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host today, Rachel Lippman. Joining me in the studio for the fifth time is...
Donna Behringer.
It's becoming a habit that we have to have you on in odd years. You've previously been on as, I think, an alderwoman and definitely as a state rep. But this is your first time now as a candidate for citywide office. For those who are not regular or frequent listeners to this podcast, give us a very brief biography of who Donna Behringer is.
Well, Donna Behringer started out in community development. And from community development, she was asked to run for office. I did run for alderman in 2002 and became an alderman in 2003. And then in 2016, I ran for Missouri State Representative of the 82nd District. And I served 8 years in the Missouri House, and I was just termed out.
So why was comptroller the office that you decided that you wanted to seek?
Well, let me explain that at first I did not plan to seek another office. I was looking in different directions. And so during COVID, I know I should get a better life, but during COVID...
We all have our own entertainment.
I was going through the city audit. I was also going through the city budget.
And this was the audit that the citizens had wanted to do in 2018, this most recent one, or a different one?
No, the comptroller's office is actually the auditor for the city of St. Louis.
Okay.
So I had always read the audit from the comptroller's office. And because I served on budget at the city level when I was an alderman for 8 years, I know how to line item read the budget. And certain things started to bother me. And I started seeing that we had large salary increases in the budget. And I also started to see in the audit that with the ARPA funds, there was a lot of money coming in, and it was moving over to SLDC, but I couldn't quite figure out what was going on over at SLDC.
And that's the St. Louis Development Corporation, kind of
yes.
The city's economic development arm.
Right. And they call it alphabet soup for a good reason, because no one can always figure out everything that goes on over there. And what people don't realize is that that was started by former Mayor Vince Schemel, because in doing development in the city, sometimes within government, there's a lot of restraints. And so they created SLDC to be able to do economic development with less oversight.
You're reading these audits and you're seeing things that are concerning you. Was there one thing you were seeing, one finding in that audit where you said, I need to fix this?
There are a couple things. And one of the things was I was going into the portals, and it's kind of like going down a rabbit hole. And I couldn't figure out why I was seeing some funds in the ARPA funds that, in my personal opinion, could have been better spent or spent somewhere else. And then I was trying to find certain money that I couldn't figure out where it went. I knew it had come out of the state budget, but I hadn't seen where it went. And then as I started looking at the things, I started inquiring of different people everywhere, whether they worked in that agency, whether they, the comptroller's office. And I was saying, I have some concerns. And I really think we should dig deeper to make sure that these funds, the ARPA funds, are being utilized in the best manner possible. Because I knew from being at the state level that they have a clawback. So if they weren't committed, that we would actually lose them. So that was a big sign for me. What I also let people know is that at the state level, I was the ranking minority chair of fiscal review, and any bill that had a fiscal note of over $250,000 had to come through my committee. So within a matter of, and it could be 24 hours, 48 hours, I would have to be an expert on a certain subject. I'd have to be able to dive into the numbers, and I would call people who worked in those areas and get confirmation. Is this accurate? Is it not accurate? And in doing all of that, I found out I had a talent. And my talent is, you can hand me financials, and you can think I'm only going to look at what you put before me, but it's just the opposite. I'm going to know that what you put before me is very simple, but I'm going to actually drill down, and I'm going to find out if you're not wanting me to know something, or I'm going to find what you forgot to put in it. And numbers became what I was known for in Jefferson City, because everyone knew if you wanted to know anything about the numbers, Berenger has drilled it down.
You've been talking about some of the confusion and where money is going for the American Rescue Plan Act. How much of that responsibility is on the comptroller for maybe not finding it, and how much of it is on the mayor or other agencies for either not documenting it properly or, you know, other concerns?
Okay. So with the ARPA funds, when they originally agreed to it, a bill was put through. And a lot of people don't realize the comptroller serves on the board of ENA, which is a three-member board, the president of the board of aldermen, the mayor, and the comptroller. And they approved the bill so that they could go ahead and get these funds out. So while that may have been one of the last times the comptroller touched it at its beginning, it wasn't the only time the comptroller's office would touch it. And what I mean by that is we had money come in for, like, I'll give you an example, the tear down of vacant buildings. Well, before they could be torn down, an actual form had to go through the comptroller's office to get signed off on. And if that was held up, that means tear down of the buildings was held up. The other part that comes up is the fact that they are the auditor, the watchdog of all the funds of the city. At any time, the comptroller can go in and audit. And when I had brought up my concerns about the ARPA funds, I had hoped that that would bring the comptroller to say, maybe I should be auditing this. So to go ahead and have the newspaper come out with some of the concerns was basically being reactive, because the comptroller did come out and say, oh, we need to completely redo this. And that would be what I call not how you would handle it from the business aspect of being the comptroller. To say we're going to take a program we've been working on for 2 years and start over from scratch would never have been how I would have approached it. How I would have approached it is, first of all, I would have been proactive, and I would have been going through all the ARPA funds, watching how they were flowing. And then when I did see an issue, I wouldn't have said we're going to start all over, knowing that we could lose all those funds if we did redo it. I would have said, let's go back over who didn't get the funds and see which ones are city businesses, and maybe we should reallocate, but not start over. Since ARPA funds came in, we've had so many other departments pop up. We've had so many more employees. We have so many different avenues it's gone down that it's just become overwhelming. And so you needed to be able to act on your feet. You needed to be able to understand how your actions or lack of actions impacted every movement of these funds. And we're talking about $500 million that have come into our city.
You've talked about one of the duties that the charter outlines for the Office of Comptroller, and that's the general accountant and auditor for the city. The Office of Comptroller has responsibility for the general supervision over the fiscal affairs of the city and preserving the credit of the city. In those two areas, where do you believe that the current comptroller has fallen short?
Well, what the comptroller also is in charge of is approving contracts with vendors. If you want to be a vendor with the city of St. Louis, the contract will go through that department. It also gets vetted, because we have vendors who are already set up with the city and vetted. But then the final sign-off comes through the comptroller's office. So what they found was is that there was a cleaning company at the airport, and they had not been paid on time. And when you're a small vendor and you have to not only pay your employees, but pay the Social Security on each end, and you're not getting reimbursed, dropping that ball made it so that actual cleaning company walked. And so our actual airport had a cleaning company that walked, and we had to scramble to fix that issue. Our airport is the welcoming mat of the city of St. Louis. And I tell people, what's the first thing you do when you get off of an airplane? You use the restroom. we have to make sure our bathrooms are clean. Now, they're clean now, but this was on the front page of the paper. And that's just one of the many things when people say to me that I said, that's inexcusable because you should have a time frame that's set up. So if there is a vendor and it comes from the airport, they've approved it, and you have to sign off, you should have so many days. And if it doesn't get done, then it has to keep going. You cannot hold up the process and procedures of the city.
For that general supervision of the fiscal affairs of the city, how do you think the comptroller has been doing keeping the city fiscally sound?
I think it's a little confusing right now. And even I have looked at the numbers. And I know that it said it's a healthy, we have this many millions. But then I also know that there are different pots of money that we don't account for. And when I say we don't account for, it's because we have money that comes in from these different props that gets put in these accounts. And so if you're still sitting on those funds and they haven't been dispersed, then are you calling that your excess funds? And that's why I absolutely don't want people to think that I'm trying to make the city look bad fiscally. What I'm trying to say is we need to make sure we're transparent with the voters and the taxpayers. We make sure they know exactly what kind of funds we are sitting on. And there are different funds that I'm not quite sure that when we say we have an excess of $35 million, is that $35 million really excess, or is that money that has not been dispersed based on the different funds that the comptroller is in charge of in dispersing? An example would be that the nonprofits were to receive money from the different funds that come in. And so if you have not dispersed the money through the CDA program, and so you're sitting on this nonprofit's $200,000, that nonprofit's $500,000, were you counting that in your total numbers? I don't know. I don't have that answer. What I can say is that in general, when you're trying to keep your bond rating up, you need to make sure that all of this is succinct and that you are being very transparent and you're very out there with letting people know out everywhere here that this is what is actually on hand, not in reserves.
So you're not sure if, like you said, the excess is actually available to be spent in other areas, or just looks like it is on the books because it has not actually been sent to those different, and by nonprofits, do you mean like neighborhood groups? Or,
yes.
Or, okay.
So community there's development corporations, the nonprofits that help with after-school programs. Those are all impacted by the comptroller's office because they have to have the different projects are set up and it has to flow through the comptroller's office.
And to be clear, you're not saying that there's necessarily anything going on here nefarious. It is just questions that you have about how this is being counted for in the budget.
Absolutely correct. I think it's happening because it's understaffed. The actual office is understaffed and overworked. They, like I said, we have way more projects because of the ARPA funds, because the other funds are coming in from money that's collected for the city, and not enough people to actually be hands-on. We've had a lot of people who worked in that office that have retired. I mean, and when you lose that entity that has all that information and knowledge, it hurts you. And so we have people that are new, and they may not know that this is what they're required to do. I know people who have said they're waiting for their ARPA funds because they have to wait till the account is set up with the comptroller's office, but then the comptroller's office didn't know they needed to set the account up.
Because that institutional knowledge is
gone. Yes, it's gone.
Your priorities that you mention on your website include public safety and quality education. What do you see as the role of the comptroller in those areas?
Well, when it comes to public safety, people just think it's a matter of police, okay? It's everything when it comes to public safety. It has to do with, are you looking at pedestrian safety? Where are the funds going? Because they do actually sit and approve the budget. The comptroller has approval on that budget. And
that's through ENA?
That's through ENA. Okay. When the budget comes in, it comes through ENA. So you get a chance to sit down and see, where are the funds going? And are the funds going towards actual programs, like after-school programs, which are public safety, because you want kids off the street? And then the second part
quality education was something else that you mentioned as well, especially since that is an entirely separate entity from City Hall.
It is a completely different entity. However, as the auditor for the city of St. Louis, you want to make sure that you know what's going on with the St. Louis Public Schools. I understand that their funding comes from the state, but as a former state rep and as the comptroller, I would also want to be seeing, is the funding coming into the public schools? And if it is it going out? I would want to look at their books. It doesn't necessarily mean I have any say over them.
So it is an informational understanding, because the health of the public schools does impact the city of St. Louis, even though they are legally two entirely different things.
Absolutely.
The comptroller, as you mentioned, is the third member of the Board of Estimate and Apportionment, the city's fiscal oversight board. Right now, the mayor, Tashara Jones, board president Macon Green are fairly ideologically aligned on issues, and that's two of three votes, which is what you need to get something out of there. Given that you can't necessarily politically stop something if you don't agree with it, what would be your role there? How would you function in that political environment?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I have a reputation, and my reputation is I will do my homework. I will go under every rock. I will find everything before I make a determination, is this in the best interest based on a vote on something fiscally? So everyone knows I do my homework. So it's not about, you know, how do I feel? It's about what do I know? And so in fiscal review, I was able to ask questions that other people did not even think to ask. And I want to be very transparent. So when I do decide to make a decision in the city of St. Louis, I'll make sure that the voters know what I'm thinking, how I've come to the conclusion, and why I'm voting the way I'm going to vote. Because I am a straight shooter, and people, that's why I'm respected. I do my homework. I have the answers. I have the questions also, but I also surround myself with people who are very knowledgeable and experts in those areas. And I tap into that. And that is why I was able to come up with the answers or the questions I had when it comes to looking at fiscal responsibility. Have you looked and spoken to everyone who works in this arena? What can they tell you? Are you missing anything? So that's very important to me. It's very important that you people who surround you are people who do understand what you're trying to get at.
Is there a policy that you have seen come out of the city recently where you are starting to realize, or as you're listening to conversations about it, that there was a blind spot that people had where they didn't think things through, or they didn't even think to ask or consider an angle in ways that you think are hurting the city of St. Louis?
I'm going to discuss those electric Mustangs. Okay. And the reason others have said, I don't understand why it bothers you. Here's why it bothers me. We're the city of St. Louis. And if you bid on a job, if you have a business in the city, they ask you to find a vendor who supplies whatever you need. So if you're a plumber, let's say pipes, they ask you first to source it through someone who has a business in the city. That's the number one thing they ask you to do. And if you can't find it in the city, you have to prove you can't find it in the city. So that's what we ask of people who want to do business with the city. All right, so we go to buy 10 electric Mustangs. Well, we bought them at Sunset Hills Ford in St. Louis County. So we're the city of St. Louis. So we go out to the county to buy cars.
We know there are Ford dealerships in the city or other car dealerships
on South Kings Highway. So let's go to the next part of that. It is full electric. We have a garage that works on the cars in the city of St. Louis. We don't have the experts at that garage to fix those cars. So where are those cars going to have to go to get fixed? They're going to go back to the dealership. So we're going to take our city money, again, taxpayer money, and take it back out to the county. And then the next thing is, it's all electric. Even I knew when I bought my car, I did a hybrid. And because a hybrid is the best for city driving. Every time you stop, how many stop signs do we have in this city?
Or unsynced red lights, die on this hill.
Exactly, right? It goes to electric. So, and it recharges the battery. Why did we go all electric? And how did you make that decision? Who needed those cars? Nobody questioned it, and I would have. And not because in the grand scheme, that was a big deal. But I find it hypocritical that this is what you expect of others who do business with the city, but you don't do it yourself.
There is a lot of uncertainty in the city right now over the refunds to be paid for the earnings tax. We know that as the result of a lawsuit over remote work from the pandemic, they've had to pay out more than $40 million for 2020, 2021, and 2022. That's more than they set aside. We don't know about 2023, 2024 future tax years yet. Two questions. First of is, where do you think that the city messed up in terms of estimating how much the impact was going to be?
Well, I think actually I could say, and I'm going to take you in a complete different direction.
I'm here for it.
I think the first mistake is how it was handled in Jefferson City. Because in Jefferson City, and it is just the known, is that they're just not very, they don't care a lot about the city of St. Louis.
And are actively hostile to the city of St. Louis. It goes beyond not even caring.
They can be. But we are not the only city in Missouri that does the earnings tax. Kansas City does. So originally, when the state said to us and Kansas City during COVID, you cannot collect the earnings tax, Kansas City came down and testified in Jefferson City and said, this is how much it's going to hurt us, but we hear you and we will do it. And the city of St. Louis came to Jefferson City and said, no, we're not going to do that. And you can't make us. And so when you say that to the legislature in Jefferson City, they get a little hostile, as you said. So not only did they say, we will make you do it, they took us to court. So we lost. And so that is where I say our first mistake was. But moving forward, we have to find another stream of revenue, because the large influx of people we have seen that have come into the city of St. Louis, we have two. There's students, because we've got great housing in Midtown now. And then we also have a lot of people who are moving into the city after they've retired. And when you retire, you don't pay the earnings tax. And that's not even been calculated. So our earnings tax is actually going to go lower than people predict. And we have to start considering, how do we replace that?
And then as the potential financial watchdog for the city, what does this do to, because, you know, the duty is the fiscal affairs of the city, what does it mean for the fiscal affairs of the city?
We have got to go back to, we have to find new money. It's called new money. New money means it comes from more than 80 miles away. And so what attracts new money into the city of St. Louis? Tourism, conferences, sports. Because when they come into the city, they get hotel rooms. They go to restaurants. So they're paying these extra taxes that we have. And also that putting that tax on the Airbnbs is going to help the city of St. Louis as well. Not as much as people thought. But when you lost people to the Airbnbs that were paying no taxes versus staying in a hotel and pays taxes, that's your new funding streams. We have to make our city attractive to those within 80 miles so they will come back into the city of St. Louis and spend the new money here.
And it's time for a quick break. And we're back on Politically Speaking with Comptroller candidate Donna Berenger. And I want to take a few minutes now to talk about the political side of this race. The St. Louis Charter Commission discussed, but did not advance, several proposals that would have weakened the power of the comptroller. And I'm wondering if there is a reason that you can think of, maybe some kind of underlying dissatisfaction with city government, that these were some of the ideas that the Charter Commission advanced.
A lot of the issues, the troubles that are going on because of the comptroller's office that have made the paper, those were concern, especially with the aldermen and with this mayor and previous mayors, that, you know, the comptroller's office needs to rethink how they're working things, how they do payroll, how they're getting checks to the vendors. And so I think originally, instead of trying to say, well, let's reevaluate the actual office, it was, well, how do we eliminate it? Which was really not a good idea. What you have to do is you have to first explain this to the general public, how our city works, which is mind-boggling because it's so old. And we have county offices in the city and we have E&A. So it's a lot to consume, but you have to get out there and you have to first explain, here is the issue and here are some ways we can solve it. And because it was done in such a manner that people didn't feel it was expressed to them. They didn't feel it was transparent. And they got very angry. The North Side said that they felt they were completely left out because they were the third meeting, not the first or the second. And so I could see where people felt left out. So instead of saying, okay, I'll think about it, they just wanted to completely shut it down. So all that work that had been done by this commission for an entire year was scrapped. And then they went back and said, oh, let's hurry up and come up with a few things. And so they did come up with some things. They came up with the Department of Transportation, you know, the budget. The current comptroller was, I think, opposed to most of them. And I had no problems with any of them. I'm after, how do we shore up our city to be more progressive? And when I say progressive, I mean that in a positive way. Progressive government in the way of, when I came into cutting the Board of Aldermen in half, I did it because I was looking at how well Kansas City was functioning. And I wanted to get our city up to speed so that we could also be in the same predicament that Kansas City is, which is Kansas City is growing and thriving. And I want St. Louis to grow and thrive. And I know we can. And I want to be part of that. And that's why I am for some of the changes that have been brought up.
What would be some changes that you could or would push for or even ask for in your office that you think could create a progressive, as you've described it, government?
First of all, we have the treasurer's office and the comptroller's office both have garages they oversee. The comptroller looks the comptroller is over the municipal garages.
I knew that the treasurer had parking. I didn't know the comptroller had the municipal garage.
Yes, and I would put that back under the treasurer's office. Why would you have two offices in charge of different garages? And when it comes to payroll, most companies do take payroll. They oversee payroll, but an actual company actually does the actual work of the payroll.
Like
the
payroll processing firms, basically.
Yes, because one of the examples was that when you bring on a new police officer in the city of St. Louis, they have to first pay for their own uniform and everything that's needed. And so that has to be reimbursed. And we have had late payments of the reimbursement. So when we talk about public safety, that falls under public safety, that we would make sure that new officers are reimbursed immediately for every expenditure they had to do. And that is something that would have been coded, could be set up within a corporation that knows how to make sure all this coding is done correctly. We also know that the earnings tax accidentally got left out of some of the aldermen's paychecks. So when they went to file for office this time, they owed the earnings tax and they did not know it. And
so they forgot to automatically deduct the earnings tax.
Yes, because it's always been automatically deducted when you work for the city. And somehow that got left out. Well, that's the kind of thing we can't afford to happen anymore. It's all these little things that are happening. And everyone's saying, I didn't know that was all under the comptroller's office. And once again, I will say, it is a lot of moving parts and it is understaffed, overworked, and we need to figure out how do we set up a process and procedure that can move forward and make it much more efficient. What are the things that do not belong under the comptroller? And we've had ideas. Should we get a finance director, right? Should we have a manager, a city manager? All those things should be looked at. And I'm open to anything. I'm one of those people. If it makes it better for the taxpayers of the city of St. Louis, I am willing to look at it. But what I also know is you have to let the taxpayers know. You must be transparent at what you're looking at and how it impacts them.
Darlene Green is an extremely popular politician. She runs unopposed in many of her races. How do you keep the concerns that you have about the operation of that office from seeming like a personal attack on her? Because that's probably going to be how it's interpreted by some of her supporters.
And when I was collecting signatures, and I collected, we were supposed to have 1,100 signatures to get on this ballot through approval voting. I collected almost all of my 2,100 by myself. And I was talking to the voters. And if they were new to the city or young, they said to me, is there somebody in that office? And I would say, yes, there is. The person there has been there 30 years. And they'd say, stop right there. How is that legal? And I said, well, it is legal because we don't have term limits. So they said, that's all I care about. Then you have the people who live in the city who do read the paper, who do know all of these errors that have been happening or work for the city and know all the errors. And they have said, 30 years is too long and it's time for change. So that has been the feedback I have been receiving. And so I don't think it's about a popularity contest. What I think it about is it's time for change. It's time for a fresh set of eyes. And what I'm telling people is, I was here in the city when we never had any money. And we're going to be back there in 2 years again. This is called a crisis, and we need a triage. And I'm very good at chaos and crisis. I come out saying I can handle this, and I usually do. It's something that my personality is good at. So I don't think this should be about attacking someone. I think it's about time for change. When I worked with the comptroller's office, which I did when I was at the Board of Aldermen, there were no issues in the beginning. Times have changed, and it's time to move with the changes.
Your base of power for both your aldermanic seat and your state rep seat are down in South St. Louis. What's your strategy for reaching out to North St. Louis voters?
Starting in September, I went to as many neighborhood events, block parties, ribbon cuttings in every area of the city of St. Louis. And I did it specifically because I wanted them to meet me. I wanted them to see me. And that's what I've been doing. I have not gone anywhere. In fact, there's been nights I've had 8 events to get to, and I have to prioritize based on, oh, I've already been there twice. I told people at the beginning, you know, there was a time when I went to a meeting that was at the Baden Library, which is on the very furthest north, and then I had to get to Patch, which is almost in Lime, furthest south. So in one night, on my own time, in my own car, which is a hybrid, I went almost 40 miles. But what was interesting was, at each of those neighborhood meetings, there was 2 things that everyone talked about. They talked about public safety, crime, and schools. So it didn't matter which side of the city I was on. But I have so much enjoyed. I really have. I have enjoyed being in every area, in every corner, in every nook and cranny of the city. And I have enjoyed the fact that there are areas that I've never had a chance to be in. And we're not just talking about north. People assume north. You can't get everywhere in the city. And when I was, I've been a state rep for 8 years. And so the changes in those 8 years, just driving through the Cortex and Midtown, I just smile because it takes 10 to 15 years for development to happen. So what I was seeing was things I actually voted on at the Board of Aldermen, and I'm very proud of it. And I love how we are growing in the Central West and Midtown. So I've been everywhere. So I tell people, if you haven't seen me, you need to get out of the house.
And what route did you take to get from Baden to Patch in one night to travel those 40 miles? Because I'm sitting here thinking, there's no, I guess King's Highway would be the most direct shot, but that's
70.
Still not. Okay, yeah, that's right. All right, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Pop out, go around, it
55,
turns into 44.
70, 70, back to 55.
Okay, there we go. How do you think the politics of the mayor's race could play out in the comptroller's race, either to your advantage or your detriment?
Well, a couple things that are going on here. I did not intentionally call any of the mayoral candidates and ask them to endorse me. And I told them, whether they were going to ask me or not, that I would be doing no endorsing. And the main reason is because I know why I'm running. I know specifically what I'm doing. It's as in from the fiscal standpoint, and all I care about is looking at how do I be the watchdog of the taxpayers' money. And I also know that it's very contentious right now in the city. And I just don't like that. It's just a shame. I hate the fact that we are really, you know, kind of divided. You're either in one camp or the other. And so that could be detrimental to me because they may not be paying attention at all to the comptroller's race. And so I need people to know that even if you want change, like if you're in the camp of I want change in the mayoral race, if you don't have change in the comptroller's race, then you're still going to be on the same trajectory. I also know that if you don't want change and you do keep the same mayor and you keep the same comptroller, you're still going to get the same thing. I can work with any of the candidates that are running for mayor. I tell people I have always been able to work with people I may not, you know, have the same beliefs. I may not even have the same opinions. But all that matters is, what do we need to do to grow our city? and I can work with you. So I can't tell you what people are thinking in the way of, oh, if I vote this way for the mayor, then I have to vote this way for the comptroller. I think right now a lot of people are focused on the mayoral race, and I need to get the word out that you also need to focus on the comptroller's race.
Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is part of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Comptroller candidate, former state rep, former alderwoman Donna Berenger, thank you for being on.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Until next time, so long.